In an era where questioning authority has become tantamount to heresy, Robert F. Kennedy Jr.'s A Letter to Liberals emerges as a provocative manifesto that has sparked fierce debate across the political spectrum. The book has become a lightning rod in progressive circles, with some dismissing it outright while others quietly acknowledge its uncomfortable questions. Celebrities like Russell Brand and Joe Rogan have amplified its message to millions, while traditional media outlets have largely avoided engaging with its core arguments. What makes this work particularly fascinating is Kennedy's pedigree. As the son of Robert F. Kennedy and nephew of President John F. Kennedy, his challenge to liberal orthodoxy comes not from the right, but from within the tradition of Kennedy liberalism itself. The book asks a fundamental question. Have today's liberals abandoned their traditional values of open inquiry, skepticism of corporate power, and defense of civil liberties in their response to the COVID-19 pandemic? The transformation of American liberalism represents one of the most profound political shifts in recent history. Kennedy identifies himself as an FDR/Kennedy liberal who was watched in dismay as his political tribe abandoned its foundational principles during the pandemic. Historically, liberalism embraced open-mindedness, protection of dissent, and fearless debate. Democrats were champions of intellectual curiosity and critical thinking, understanding the importance of scrutinizing corporate science, particularly from pharmaceutical companies with their troubling history of fraud, exemplified by cases like the Vioxx scandal and opioid crisis. Yet today's lockdown liberals have developed an almost allergic reaction to debate. A shocking 65% of Democrats now support government censorship of unauthorized opinions, a stunning abandonment of democratic principles. This shift manifests in multiple ways: social media content removal, academic censorship, and professional ostracism of dissenting voices. When confronted with scientific challenges to pandemic policies, many liberals respond not with evidence-based counterarguments, but with appeals to authority, cancel culture tactics, and demands for censorship. Even respected scientists who question prevailing narratives face immediate backlash and accusations of spreading misinformation. This represents a complete inversion of traditional liberal values. The left once questioned authority and corporate power, as evidenced by historic movements against war, corporate malfeasance, and government overreach. Now it defers to pharmaceutical executives and government bureaucrats without scrutiny. It once championed free speech, defending controversial voices from Mario Savio to anti-war protesters. Now it advocates for suppressing dangerous ideas. It once defended the marginalized. Now it supports policies that disproportionately harm society's most vulnerable members, particularly working-class families and minority communities. What makes this shift particularly troubling is how it has transformed scientific discourse. Rather than engaging with evidence, many liberals now treat scientific questions as matters of political loyalty. Questioning vaccine efficacy or the wisdom of lockdowns isn't seen as scientific skepticism, but as political heresy, evidence of right-wing sympathies or conspiracy thinking. This tribalism has replaced the evidence-based medicine that liberals once championed with appeals to cherry-picked authorities and manufactured consensus. The scientific method itself, based on hypothesis testing, debate, and continuous questioning, has been subordinated to a new orthodoxy where certain conclusions are deemed unquestionable regardless of emerging evidence. This intellectual closure has real consequences. Important debates about natural immunity, early treatment protocols, and the cost-benefit analysis of various interventions have been stifled. Medical professionals who raise concerns face professional retaliation, while public health policies increasingly reflect political imperatives rather than scientific evidence. The liberal tradition of speaking truth to power has been replaced by a reflexive defense of institutional authority, marking a profound departure from historical liberal principles of open inquiry and robust debate. Despite the unwavering public messaging that COVID vaccines would end the pandemic, the empirical evidence presents a more complicated picture. The European Journal of Epidemiology published a striking finding. Countries with higher vaccination rates experienced higher COVID-19 case rates. This counterintuitive pattern appeared consistently across nations, challenging the narrative that mass vaccination would stop viral spread. The numbers tell a sobering story. U.S. COVID deaths in 2022, post-vaccination, exceeded those in 2020, pre-vaccination. Egon Insurance reported a 40% rise in COVID deaths among people under 65 in the third quarter of 2021, precisely when vaccination rates were climbing. Highly vaccinated nations like South Korea and Australia saw record COVID outbreaks and deaths following mass vaccination campaigns, with Australia's deaths rising an astonishing 1,700% compared to early pandemic levels. Even more puzzling, countries with minimal vaccination rates often had the lowest COVID mortality. Haiti, with just 1.4% of its population vaccinated, suffered only 837 deaths among 11.7 million people. Nigeria, with a 1.5% vaccination rate, experienced just 15.25 deaths per million compared to America's nearly 200 times higher rate of 2,995 deaths per million. Both countries made therapeutic drugs like ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine widely available to their citizens. Perhaps most striking is the case of India's Uttar Pradesh state, home to 235 million people. The state effectively ended its pandemic by distributing ivermectin, achieving only 100 deaths per million with just 20% vaccination coverage. Meanwhile, America, following Dr. Fauci's vaccination-focused protocols, achieved the world's 16th worst death rate and accumulated 16% of global COVID deaths despite having only 4.25% of the world population. What might explain these paradoxical outcomes? Multiple studies from Israel, Sweden, UK, New Zealand, and Qatar suggest COVID vaccines develop negative efficacy after 6 to 9 months, potentially making vaccinated individuals more susceptible to infection than the unvaccinated. A peer-reviewed Swedish study in The Lancet confirmed vaccine efficacy drops below zero 7 to 9 months after vaccination. Remember when we were told that getting vaccinated would prevent you from catching or spreading COVID? This claim formed the ethical foundation for vaccine mandates and passports. Public health officials, including the CDC director Rochelle Walensky, initially declared that vaccinated people do not carry the virus, and President Biden stated that you're not going to get COVID if you have these vaccinations. If vaccines stop transmission, then vaccination became not just a personal health choice, but a civic duty. The unvaccinated could be portrayed as selfish threats to public health, justifying their exclusion from workplaces, schools, and public spaces. But this foundational promise gradually crumbled as breakthrough infections became increasingly common. When Dr. Fauci caught COVID after his fourth vaccination, the failure became impossible to ignore. Early monkey studies had already shown vaccinated primates caught and transmitted COVID at the same rates as unvaccinated ones. Events like the Gridiron Dinner, where 72 fully vaccinated attendees contracted COVID, further demonstrated vaccines couldn't prevent spread. Similar outbreaks occurred on fully vaccinated cruise ships, military vessels, and at professional sporting events where vaccination was mandatory. Despite this reality, authorities imposed severe mandates that cost unvaccinated people their jobs, education, and civil rights. Healthcare workers who had served through the pandemic's darkest days were fired. Military personnel with years of service were discharged. University students were expelled or forced to attend remotely. This discrimination extended to healthcare, with hospitals denying life-saving treatments based on vaccination status, including a 6-month-old baby initially denied a heart transplant. Liberal figures like Noam Chomsky endorsed excluding the unvaccinated from society, suggesting they should remove themselves and be denied food access, while countries like Australia confined the unvaccinated to internment camps. The ethical implications are profound and far-reaching. If vaccines don't prevent transmission, what justifies forcing them on unwilling recipients? If a medical intervention primarily benefits the individual receiving it, shouldn't the decision remain personal? The disconnect between scientific reality and policy became increasingly difficult to reconcile, yet many liberals continued supporting mandates long after their scientific justification had collapsed. Even as data showed natural immunity provided equal or superior protection, those with prior infection were still subject to mandate requirements. This represents a troubling departure from bodily autonomy principles that liberals have traditionally championed. The same voices that declare "my body, my choice" for reproductive rights abandoned this principle when it came to vaccination, revealing an inconsistency that undermines liberal credibility on personal freedom issues. The precedent set by these policies, that the state can force medical procedures on unwilling citizens based on shifting scientific claims, raises serious concerns about future public health responses and individual liberty. The social division and mistrust created by these policies may have lasting consequences for public health messaging and institutional credibility. While public health officials maintain the safe and effective mantra, the vaccine safety monitoring systems were detecting concerning signals. The Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System, VARS, recorded 1,329,135 adverse events over 17 months post-vaccine rollout, including 241,910 serious injuries. These included cardiac and neurological issues, blood clots, strokes, myocarditis, seizures, paralysis, and heart attacks, even in children. VAERS recorded 29,270 deaths since the vaccine rollout, more fatalities in 18 months than for all vaccines combined during the system's 32-year history. Health and Human Services studies indicate VAERS captures fewer than 1% of actual injuries, suggesting the true numbers could be substantially higher. Perhaps most troubling, Pfizer's own 6-month clinical trial data showed vaccinated individuals had a 23% increased death risk from all causes and 400% elevated risk from cardiac arrest compared to unvaccinated participants. This suggests that for every COVID death prevented, 4 additional people might die from cardiac arrest. Insurance companies began reporting alarming waves of unexplained excess deaths among previously healthy vaccinated Americans in 2021. One America CEO reported excess deaths up 40% in Q3 2021 among workers aged 18 to 64, calling it unheard of and a 1 in 200-year catastrophe. Lincoln National reported a staggering 163% increase in death benefit payouts from group life policies during 2022 from non-pandemic-related mortality. Former BlackRock portfolio manager Ed Dowd's analysis shows an 85% rise in excess mortality among millennials, 25 to 44, equivalent to a Vietnam War in a year. Military Health Database reported an 1,100% increase in mortality among vaccinated 18 to 49-year-olds in 2021. Meanwhile, public health officials and media largely ignored waves of sudden deaths, including 992 documented athlete cardiac arrests with 644 deaths following COVID shots. The CDC created a new cause of death, sudden adult death syndrome, SADS, which critics view as normalizing these unexplained deaths in healthy young people. Perhaps most disturbing for those who value transparency and scientific integrity is how thoroughly our institutions failed to uphold these principles during the pandemic. The New York Times belatedly admitted that CDC systematically withheld data challenging official narratives while cherry-picking data to promote the safe and effective orthodoxy. Both Pfizer and FDA petitioned a federal court to deny public access to clinical trial data for 75 years, the same data FDA reviewed in just 108 days before licensing. two top vaccine regulators at FDA resigned immediately afterward. This systematic concealment was facilitated by unprecedented media compliance. At the pandemic's outset, leading news organizations formed the Trusted News Initiative, TNI, pledging to censor reports challenging official COVID proclamations. This compliance with pharmaceutical industry narratives was further enabled by the industry's dominance in television advertising, Bill Gates' $319 million distribution to news organizations, and HHS's billion-dollar payouts to outlets like CNN and the New York Times to promote COVID vaccines without disclosure. The media abandoned traditional skepticism of government edicts, marginalized dissenters, and amplified establishment groupthink. Social media platforms implemented aggressive censorship policies, suppressing even factually accurate information that contradicted official narratives. Scientists and physicians who raised concerns found themselves deplatformed, demonetized, and professionally marginalized. This represents a profound betrayal of scientific principles. Science advances through questioning, debate, and the challenging of hypotheses, not through censorship and appeals to authority. When Dr. Fauci declared that criticizing him was attacking science itself, he revealed a fundamental misunderstanding of how science works. Science is not a person or an institution, it's a process of inquiry that depends on the free exchange of ideas and evidence. The pandemic response has revealed how thoroughly captured our public health institutions have become by pharmaceutical interests. The revolving door between regulatory agencies and the companies they regulate creates inherent conflicts of interest that undermine public trust. When the same officials who approve drugs later take lucrative positions with the companies that make them, the system's integrity becomes compromised. One of the most remarkable aspects of the pandemic has been watching numerous conspiracy theories transform into acknowledged facts. What Kennedy and others were vilified for saying in 2020 and 2021 has increasingly been confirmed by mainstream sources in 2022 and 2023. The CDC has quietly acknowledged cloth mask mandates make little scientific sense, with over 100 studies showing masks don't stop viral spread and 60 studies showing physical and mental health injuries. A comprehensive April 2022 study of 35 European countries found no benefits from masking and instead showed correlation with increased COVID death risk. Social distancing guidelines were dropped after former FDA Commissioner Dr. Scott Gottlieb confessed publicly that the 6-foot rule was arbitrary and not science-based. Former CDC Director Robert Redfield confirmed school closures had no scientific basis, while their damage to children has proven cataclysmic. Studies show alarming mental health injuries, with 80% of young people reporting deteriorated emotional well-being, increases in self-harm, eating disorders, and antidepressant prescriptions. Mass lockdowns contradicted a century of public health practice and WHO guidelines, ignoring warnings from 600-plus scientists who cautioned President Trump that lockdowns would create catastrophic economic and health consequences. The Great Barrington Declaration, signed by 76,000 scientists and physicians, recommended the traditional approach of quarantining the sick and protecting the vulnerable. According to IMF data, global lockdowns cost a cataclysmic $16 trillion, while Johns Hopkins researchers confirmed they did practically nothing to reduce COVID spread. The CDC now acknowledges natural immunity is superior to vaccine-induced immunity. An Israeli study shows natural immunity is 27 times more durable and provides broader protection against variants than vaccines. Despite this, Anthony Fauci continued promoting vaccination for previously infected children, contradicting his own 40-year stance against this practice. U.S. intelligence analysts now suggest a lab leak from the Wuhan Institute of Virology is a plausible origin for the virus. A Vanity Fair investigation indicates Dr. Fauci misled two presidents and orchestrated a global cover-up about COVID-19's origins. Beyond the scientific debates lie the very real human consequences of pandemic policies. Lockdowns created devastating impacts globally, with reports showing 10,000 African children starving monthly and twice as many children dying from lockdowns as from COVID-19 itself. In developing nations, disrupted food supply chains and economic collapse led to widespread malnutrition, with UNICEF reporting that an additional 6.7 million children face severe acute malnutrition. The economic damage will likely hobble public health systems for decades, particularly in regions already struggling with limited healthcare infrastructure. The policies disproportionately harmed minorities across multiple dimensions. While scantily vaccinated African nations had dramatically lower death rates than America, Black Americans died at 3.6 times and Latinos at 2.5 times the rates of whites. This disparity reflected pre-existing healthcare inequities, occupational exposure risks, and limited access to medical care. In urban areas, minority communities faced higher infection rates due to crowded housing conditions and reliance on public transportation, while often lacking access to testing and early treatment options. Children suffered severely through multiple cascading effects. Child labor increased globally, with the International Labor Organization reporting 160 million children forced into work. Hunger affected 24% of American teens, while childhood obesity rates surged due to decreased physical activity and increased screen time. Developmental delays became widespread, particularly among children from lower-income families who lacked access to educational resources during remote learning. Brown University research revealed that American toddlers lost an astonishing 22 IQ points during lockdowns, with poor and minority children bearing the heaviest burden. This cognitive decline was attributed to reduced social interaction, limited educational stimulation, and increased family stress. Mental health deteriorated dramatically, with 20% of teenagers contemplating suicide and 44.2% reporting persistent sadness. Rather than addressing these root causes, the CDC simply readjusted childhood developmental milestones downward, effectively normalizing the decline. The pandemic response cost America $16 trillion, creating an unprecedented burden for future generations. Masks became symbols of dehumanization for essential workers and the poor, who had no choice but to risk daily exposure. The economic impact created a stark divide. While the professional class worked comfortably from home, essential workers faced daily exposure risks in grocery stores, warehouses, and delivery services. The Federal Reserve's monetary policies led to asset inflation that primarily benefited the wealthy, while working-class Americans faced unemployment rates reaching 14.7%, the highest since the Great Depression. Housing costs soared, with median home prices increasing by 24% in 2021 alone, pushing affordable housing further out of reach for many families. This represents a profound moral failure in public policy implementation. The measures that were supposed to protect public health ended up creating a cascade of unintended consequences that disproportionately harmed the most vulnerable among us, the poor, minorities, children, and the elderly. Yet many liberals, traditionally champions of these groups, remained silent about these harms or actively supported the policies causing them, creating a troubling disconnect between progressive ideals and practical outcomes. Unlike in 2001, when liberal Democrats, led by Senator Edward Kennedy, mounted fierce opposition to the Patriot Act's surveillance provisions, during COVID, liberals largely aligned with neocons and technocrats to impose unprecedented infringements on personal liberties. Constitutional violations proliferated across multiple dimensions, including systematic censorship of dissenting medical opinions, forced closure of religious institutions, and severe restrictions on public gatherings and protests, all direct violations of core First Amendment protections. Even peaceful outdoor protests faced aggressive dispersal, while other mass gatherings received selective approval based on their political alignment. bureaucratic edicts systematically dismantled constitutional protections through emergency powers. The Fifth Amendment's guarantees of due process were bypassed as millions of businesses faced mandatory closures without hearings or just compensation. The Seventh Amendment right to jury trials for pharmaceutical injuries was effectively abolished through liability shields granted to vaccine manufacturers. Fourth Amendment safeguards against unreasonable searches crumbled under expansive surveillance programs, including contact tracing apps, phone tracking, and social media monitoring. These intrusive measures often continued well beyond their original scope and timeline. Canada's unprecedented freezing of protesters' bank accounts during the trucker protests demonstrated another concerning authoritarian tactic, weaponizing financial access to suppress dissent. This move presaged a broader global shift toward programmable digital currencies, with nearly 100 nations now developing central bank digital currencies, CBDCs, that could enable granular control over citizens' transactions and economic activity. Such systems create the infrastructure for financial censorship and social control on an unprecedented scale. This systematic dismantling of civil liberties represents a profound betrayal of traditional liberal principles. The political left historically served as the primary defender of constitutional rights, recognizing that these protections were most essential for protecting minority views and society's most vulnerable members. Now, many liberals appear willing to sacrifice fundamental rights for an illusion of security, disregarding Benjamin Franklin's timeless warning that those who would trade essential liberty for temporary safety deserve neither liberty nor safety. The institutional architecture of censorship and control established during the pandemic has created dangerous precedents that will outlast the crisis. Future governments, including those that liberals may oppose, can readily exploit these mechanisms of control. The censorship infrastructure constructed to suppress COVID misinformation can be seamlessly repurposed to silence environmental activists, anti-war protesters, labor organizers, or any other groups challenging established power structures. Private-public partnerships formed to monitor disinformation have created a shadow regulatory system operating outside constitutional constraints. The economic devastation and rights infringements have sparked a rebellion among working and poor Americans, once the Democratic Party's core constituencies, who are rising against globalist elites and corporate titans who collaborated with regulatory technocrats. This mirrors Robert Kennedy's 1966 prediction that wealth disparities and power abuses would precipitate inevitable revolutions. Liberal media mischaracterizes this dissent as right-wing Trumpism, but the anti-mandate movement is actually racially and religiously diverse, ideologically mixed, and increasingly views itself as engaged in class warfare against big tech, pharma, banking, media, and their elite allies. Democrats miss a crucial opportunity by aligning with pharmaceutical companies and global elites rather than acknowledging the inequitable impact of pandemic policies on working classes and people of color. America faces its most dangerous political polarization since the Civil War, driven by orchestrated fear, systematic censorship, and fierce tribalism. To prevent corporate capture of the rising dissident movement, liberals must engage with political opponents rather than avoiding dialogue. Kennedy defends his willingness to speak with conservative figures like Tucker Carlson and Steve Bannon despite liberal criticism, arguing that finding common ground requires conversation across political divides. The tribal disputes between Republicans and Democrats, racial groups, and vaccination status only serve global elites who exploit these distractions to rob Americans of wealth, health, and freedom. Coercive policies and speech suppression breed skepticism rather than trust. As Professor Macari notes, Americans hunger for honest data rather than politically curated science from a small group of like-minded experts. For its survival, the left must rediscover critical thinking and reconnect with its traditional base. This means returning to core liberal values, defending civil liberties, questioning corporate power, protecting the vulnerable, and insisting on transparent, evidence-based governance. It means engaging with uncomfortable facts rather than censoring them, and prioritizing truth over tribal loyalty. The tribal forward requires courage, the courage to question authorities, challenge powerful interests, and sometimes stand apart from one's political tribe when principle demands it. It requires the humility to admit when policies have failed and the wisdom to change course. Most of all, it requires a renewed commitment to the democratic ideal that free people, armed with accurate information, can make better decisions than experts or authorities acting without accountability.